You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up tonight at 7, it's Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. Tonight, Donald Trump swept nearly all the swing states on Tuesday to win the presidential election, a victory that the polls and the pundits failed to anticipate. Rudin looks at the election results and considers the challenges that the future Trump administration could face. That's coming up tonight at 7 on the Ideas Network. First, for the last year and a half, the American people have watched a presidential campaign unfold that heightened the partisan differences in the country. But what came as a surprise was the split among GOP members, people who at least at first glance shared the same political viewpoint. The split seemed to divide supporters of Donald Trump and members of the so-called GOP establishment. But our next guest thinks the time is right for an internal truce, for Republicans to come together and unite behind the next wave of conservative policies. And we'd like to hear from you on this. Are you a Republican? Maybe a Republican who was torn between competing ideologies during this election. And what is your hope for the party? What would you like to see done? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. And joining us now to talk about this is Mario Loyola. He is a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and a contributing editor at the National Review. Mario, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you wrote an article just before the election where you outlined your argument for a truce in the GOP's what you call a civil war. Set the stage. What was the state of the GOP just before the election?
Well, at the beginning of the election cycle, we had, of course, we had the Tea Party wave that started in the years right after the Obama election, the elections of 2010 and 2012, which gave the Republican Party big victories, control of the House of Representatives, control of the Senate. That was a very focused sort of ideological movement focused on constitutional reforms, constitutional protection, kind of very basic anti-establishment in the sense of, you know, not being happy with the way that things were run, not being happy with, you know, government by special interests, government by lobbyists. They were very anti-earmarks, this kind of thing. But they got into this tendency. I mean, they saw themselves as reviving the spirit of the American Revolution of James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, Ben Franklin, the Constitution. But sometimes they kind of veered off into the spirit of the French Revolution. And the French Revolution, of course, was a much more fratricidal revolution and, you know, the Jacobins sending each other to the guillotine for infractions of ideological purity. And it was a much more kind of a doctrinaire affair in France. And that was unfortunate because it kind of set this tenor of recrimination and, you know, violating Reagan's 11th commandment, thou shalt not speak ill of a fellow Republican. And so it's in the midst of this sort of recriminations between sitting senators and the Senate Majority Leader and between House members and other House members within the Republican Party that Donald Trump arrives. And then, of course, we had a much bigger recriminations during the campaign season between the Never Trump faction and the pro-Trump faction. And so I just kind of want to say, can't we just get along? I mean, because no one's going to get what they want except for through a unified party machinery that works well and frankly, through a unified legislature that works well for both parties through the give and take of legislation, something that Bill Clinton could speak to, something that people in the 90s are well aware of from the welfare reform efforts and a lot of accomplishments that crossed party lines during the 90s.
Well, it's been 3 days about since Donald Trump was declared the winner of this presidential election. What do you see happening? Do you see some of those divisions maybe not evaporating, but maybe being put behind in the excitement about what comes next?
I think that there is a sort of recognition on the part of the various tendencies within the Republican Party to think about the possibilities now and think sort of optimistically. Optimism hasn't been fashionable for a while. Being a respectable politician hasn't been very respectable for a while. And maybe it's time for being a respectable politician to become respectable again. I mean, I think that you've got, you know, Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, did what I think is, frankly, a really brilliant job of this bottom-up approach that he's been pursuing doggedly for a year. His program, A Better Way, The Better Way for the Republican Party, which is an agenda of tax reforms fixing poverty programs and the Constitution and the economy and health care reform. And there's a lot of that. That was a very important process because it's not just a couple of bright Republicans talking to themselves and trying to figure out, you know, what would we like the Constitution to look, you know, what would we like the country to look like? This was an actual, you know, he gave different pieces of this out to committee chairmen, and they went out to their constituents, and they had town halls, and it was really like a grassroots up kind of a thing to figure out what would work. What are people actually going to vote for? Because you can have your strong opinion, and I have my strong opinion, but what we've lost sight of in this country, I think, too much, is that we need to convince a majority of the people to agree with us. And in some cases, we need to convince a large majority of the people to agree with us, including lots of people of the other party. And it's only through this kind of grassroots development of policy that you have a chance of getting there. And so now it's a year. It's a year after Speaker Ryan announced this initiative, and we've got a set of proposals, and they're fleshed out. And so now the question is there overlap between this and the president and President-elect Trump's agenda? And there appears to be a great deal of overlap. So, you know, the Trump administration starts, I think, with Republicans, at least at this couple of days after the election, on a positive note, and mindful of the fact that it's very difficult to have a successful administration, even in the best of times, and even if you're the most well-prepared of presidents.
We're talking with Mario Loyola right now. He is a contributing editor at the National Review and also a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, talking about what's next for the Republican Party and what the party can do to heal the rifts within its own rank. And you were talking about Paul Ryan's approach. And yesterday, Donald Trump visited Capitol Hill. He talked with House Speaker Paul Ryan. And as you were saying, these two did not always see eye to eye. In fact, sometimes things were pretty acrimonious between the two of them, but Ryan yesterday sounded as though he was ready to work, and here's their exchange.
Donald Trump had one of the most impressive victories we've ever seen, and we're going to turn that victory into progress for the American people, and we are now talking about how we're going to get the ground running to make sure that we can get this country turned around and make America great again.
Well, thank you very much, and Mr. Speaker, it's been an honor. We had a meeting with the president, as you know, before. There was an excellent meeting. We just spent quite a bit of time together. I think we're going to do some absolutely spectacular things for the American people. We look forward to starting. In fact, truthfully, we can't get started fast enough.
Donald Trump speaking with House Speaker Paul Ryan. That was recorded yesterday. And do you see some of these rifts healing? Do you see Donald Trump and Paul Ryan being able to work together, or do you see some of these rifts that began, these fractures during the campaign, deepening within this next couple of years?
Well, I think that history provides a good clue to how to answer that question. I mean, lots of presidential administrations start on a very hopeful note. Even, the opposing party tends to give the incoming president the benefit of the doubt and sort of extend an open hand. And then, you know, the reality of politics starts to take over. And, like I said a moment ago, it's very difficult to have a successful administration, even in the best of times. And, politics is hard, and it's hard to, you know, leave with the same approval rating that you had coming in. But I think there's a recognition that a lot is possible if the different strands of the Republican Party are willing to put aside their differences and work together. And frankly, I mean, it's not just the need for unity within the Republican Party. The Republicans have 52 votes in the Senate, and that means that under the rules of the Senate, you normally need 60 votes to get legislation moved because of the rules attached to what we call cloture. And so, you know, the Republicans are going to need 8 Democratic senators on a regular basis to get to move stuff. And I think that, you know, that's good because this is a time when people have to kind of relearn the fine art of compromise.
Now, in this piece, the reason we reached out to you, you said, and this was again before the election, but you said you thought maybe the best thing would be for Donald Trump to win the election in a landslide and then immediately resign and sort of cede power over to Mike Pence. Is that still something you think would be the best outcome for the party?
So I picked my words carefully, and that's not exactly what I said. What I said was, from the point of view of many conservatives, right, who of the never Trump persuasion, that's what they would like to see. I was sort of trying to describe the different strands within the party. I think that, and you know, maybe there are people who are like inveterate anti-Trump persons that remain so. But I think that, you know, again, there is a legitimate position, even for the kind of never Trump sort of members of Congress to take here, a legitimate basis for them to wish the best for this administration. Even President Obama, who can hardly be expected to you know, who's not Donald Trump's best friend by any means, wished him the best and made the point that all Americans have a stake in the success of a president. And so, I mean, one thing that I think I said in that article is, you know, we used to pray in this country for God to bless the president over the dinner table, and we said grace at the dinner table, and that's a good place to start here. I mean, let's. You know, every president needs God on his side. I mean, every president can use the inspiration to rise to the awesome responsibility and show the dignity and honor and benevolence and bearing that the office of the presidency requires. And you know, if President-elect Trump rises to that challenge, then he's going to have a successful administration and he'll be recognized as such.
We're talking right now with Mario Loyola about what the Republican Party can do to heal the rifts within its own ranks. Mario is a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and a contributing editor at the National Review. And we'd like to hear from you on this. What did you think of the fractured GOP during this election? Are you a party loyalist or are you backing Donald Trump, even if his ideas are different from the mainstream GOP? And what is your forecast for the future of the party? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're talking about how this last presidential campaign cycle caused deep fractures among the Republican Party and what can be done to mend the divide as President-elect Donald Trump heads to the Oval Office. And we'd like to hear from you. If you're a Republican, what are your thoughts on the party as it stands today? Do you feel like the divisions can be overcome? Are they being overcome already? Did you support Donald Trump's campaign? And how is your opinion now? Call us at 800-642-1234 or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. Mario Loyola stays with us. He's a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty and a contributing editor at the National Review. And Mario, we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line. Tom from Milwaukee would like to know, what about cooperation for the other people who didn't vote for Trump? How do you see the GOP working across the aisle, given that the country is divided and many people voted for Clinton instead?
Well, so I think the answer to that is you know, an agenda that will benefit all Americans. And I think it's fair to say, if you take an honest look at the agenda that the Speaker of the House has laid out, his A Better Way agenda, these are things that, I mean, you know, the poverty programs are obviously targeted at poor people, but these are things that are made in sort of the spirit of helping everyone in the country. And I think if we approach, for example, health reform, let's step back from the acrimonious debate over Obamacare and think about the fact that we all are after the same thing at the end of the day. We all want a system of affordable, accessible, high-quality health care that everyone has access to. And so the question is how to deliver that, right? I mean, our criticism, the criticism that conservatives have of a single-payer system is not that we disagree with the goal of affordable, accessible, high-quality care. It's that we are predicting on the basis of a series of things that we can demonstrate on a blackboard that this is not going to get us there, right? That there are several problems with it, that there are better ways. And I think if we approach these policy issues in that spirit, you're liable to get back to a politics of bipartisanship and bipartisan agreement on these big reforms. One thing that it's really important to recognize is that the system of government by special interests and by special interest lobbyists extracting all kinds of benefits for themselves at the expense of everybody else, that is very bipartisan. There's no party that has a monopoly of this system of government by special interest that's done so much damage to our country over the last 70 years. And so I think that it's really, if you listen to candidates' speeches, I mean, I understand that people voted for Senator Clinton with the best of intentions. But if you listen to her campaign speech, it was just a laundry list of special advantages for politically organized special interest groups. She hardly said a single thing that would benefit all Americans. And that's even though I know a lot of people, 65 million people, 63 million people voted for her with the best of intentions. But I think the thing is to realize that we've got to get away from the idea that personalities matter more than the actual system in which they have to operate. And we've got some problems in our system of government.
Let's take a caller now. We've got James joining us from the Wisconsin Dells. James, hi.
How's it going? Yeah, I'm really excited about, you know, the prospect of, well, the reality of President-elect Trump gaining the White House, just because I think that I've never seen it where, Bush had both legislative parties, the Senate and the House, were Republican, or did he? I don't think he did have it.
He did for a few years.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Trump will have both of those groups, as well as the chance to put a conservative on the Supreme Court. I think that the prospects are unbelievable. I know that it was tough to get to this point. I know the National Review didn't want Trump to win, but you know we're here at this point, and we have a chance to really pass some legislation that got held up. Like there's a lot of good legislation that came out of the House that didn't get passed.
James, can you point to a particular piece of legislation that you're excited about?
I would say probably some of the I think some of the voter ID laws. To put it honestly, I think that the voter ID laws that died, that were kind of hatched in the House, that went to the Senate, that died, are pieces of legislation that's been passed at state level that should be at a federal deal. Just because, I mean, with the amount of people coming into the country and how certain state government bodies hand out ID cards, you know, they hand these ID cards out. People don't know if they're here legally or not.
James, thank you for the thoughts there. And Mario, what do you say to James wanting to move some stuff through that he's been looking at?
Yeah, there was a lot of good legislation that passed in the House of Representatives during the last 6 years. Some of it is stuff that people ought to be able to agree on now. I mean, for example, let's take one example. There's a piece of legislation called the RAINS Act. The purpose of the RAINS Act is to make sure that any major new executive agency regulation, like an EPA regulation or a Health and Human Services regulation, that's a significant regulation that's going to have an impact on the economy beyond a certain threshold, has to be approved by Congress. Now, that's obviously meant to sort of limit the executive's discretion, how much freedom the president has in adopting regulations pursuant to delegations of rulemaking authority from Congress. Now, the Democrats were against that during the Obama administration because President Obama had a had an agenda of big regulations that he wanted to get through, and he saw it as the only way to get his agenda through because Congress was against it. But we can all agree that there ought to be limits on the powers of the presidency. We can all agree that there ought to be limits on executive agency latitude, right? We can all agree that limits on government power are important. And I bet you that there are going to be a lot of Democrats that are going to have a change of heart about the importance of limits on presidential power now that the presidency has switched. And hopefully there will be Republicans who maintain the principles that they had during the Obama administration. That's an opportunity to redress a major imbalance that's developed in the government of the United States over several decades, which is the migration, really, of the transfer of legislative authority to the executive branch.
Now, briefly, as we start to wrap up, there are a lot of Clinton Democrats out there who think that Hillary Clinton did have policies that would have benefited them and have policies that would be more beneficial to them than Donald Trump's policies. Do you see that the GOP, in the position that it's in right now, with some of these divisions that we're talking about still remaining, do you think the GOP is in a position both to clarify its platform, to tend to its image, and also to govern both parties at this particular stage in time?
Well, you know, like I said earlier, they only have 52 votes in the Senate, and they need 60 for essentially to do whatever they want without, regardless of what the opposition thinks, right? I mean, which is the situation that President Obama had that situation only for the first 2 years, which is why Obamacare didn't have any Republican votes, right? Obamacare is just a compromise among a bunch of Democrats who disagreed with each other, right? And so that's why the law looks the way that it does. In normal times, when you don't have 60 votes controlled by one party in the Senate, everything sort of has to be compromised, and nothing's going to get through unless you've got, you know, a significant portion of votes. And I think that any party that wants to have a lasting legacy needs to be able to understand the concerns of the other side. And that's one thing that we haven't seen in a long time. I mean, Bill Clinton had a lot of failings from a conservative point of view, but one thing you've got to say about the man is that he was, you know, as Trent Lott used to say, John McCain used to say, the smartest person in the room. And the reason why...
We have to leave it there, but that's a good place to leave it. Mario, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Mario Loyola, Senior Fellow at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.